Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack. Does your business use the three bin system? Learn more about your legal recycling obligations at repack.ie.
In the Green Scene today, how the horseshoe crab may escape from its role in the testing of injectables for human use. But first, a superfood that may save the honeybee. We're joined by Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Tell me about the honeybees. What sort of plight they're in?
Well, honeybees are really suffering quite significantly at the moment. So unfortunately, we're seeing in many places a lot of colony loss. So you have a hive of honeybees and in some places, 50% of hives don't survive at all to the next year. And in some parts of North America, it's up to 70% now. And that's because of lots of different things that are going on. Pesticide use, you know, climate change is changing the times that flowers come into bloom, and that's impacting how the bees can
feed. And what about the amount of honey that they take from the hive?
Yeah, the amount of honey that they take from the hive can damage a hive, but good beekeepers know how to do that properly. But even good beekeepers are losing their hives. And it's a real concern for us because, you know, bees are our most important pollinator. They pollinate about 70% of our food crops. That's worth about $15 billion a year just in the US alone. So it's big business and it's absolutely critical for our food.
Now, they do supplementary feed the bee in the winter, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I mean, for lots of reasons. One, just to help get them through the winter, and also, you know, so they're not overly competing with all the other wild insects out there, which are also critical. But I guess the problem that we have is that the food that the bees have been given, it's a bit like sort of junk food that you and I might eat. It'll get us through the week, but we might not feel brilliant after it. And even though it does help the bees to survive, it's not helping them to survive in great health. And often, you know, they're not that successful at bringing the next generation of little bees along with this food. So it's been a real challenge for science that seems to have been solved by researchers in Oxford. And it was published in the journal Nature just this week. So they went through some painstaking work and they analysed different bee tissues and they analysed larvae, little baby bees. They analysed the nurse bees that produce royal jelly and look after those bees and look after the queen. And they managed to identify six different sterols that were absolutely critical in the bee's tissue. And a sterol is a type of fat, a lipid. It's a bit like, you know, we have cholesterol in our diet, but we're sometimes told to eat plant sterols to help bring our cholesterol down. But these plant sterols are found in pollen and they're absolutely critical for bees to be healthy. So once they had identified these six critical sterols that were at high concentration in the bee's tissue, they used genetic engineering to engineer a yeast, which is normally used to produce protein for fish farms, actually, so we know it's safe. And they produced a sort of blend of sterols that they then put into bee food. And they tested this. So they had a closed greenhouse. So they had colonies that were only existing in these greenhouses, so they weren't getting other food. And they had a group that got their new superfood and a group that got the regular sort of fast food supplement. And what they found was the colonies that got the enriched yeast produced 15 times more larvae than those that didn't. So and they successfully went on to become pupa and you know, emerge as bees. And they also found their breeding season continued a little bit longer. And actually then when you looked at sort of the profile of those bees and you analysed them afterwards, they look like a wild bee. They look like a bee that's had the best wild diet available to
them.
So
it works.
It works.
Now, what about the bee that's not in the hive, that doesn't get the superfood, the one that you'll find in the grass?
Yeah. I mean, there's thousands of species of wild bee, but I suppose the honeybee is the one that we almost keep as a domesticated animal, even though we might not think of it that way. And certainly that represents a huge number of our pollinators. They're often kept around agricultural land. So if we can produce this and get it out to bees, it's a real help to keep the bees that we have healthy. And we certainly need to do that for now, while maybe we sort out some of the issues that are damaging them in the longer term. Exactly.
Loss. Yeah. Now, who knew the horseshoe crab has a vital role to play in medicine?
Yeah, so the horseshoe crab, which is a sort of prehistoric looking beast, it looks like an upside down bowl, oval shaped with a tail coming out the back. So not like the brown crab that we get here. You get a lot of them in North America. But for about the last 50 years, they have been absolutely critical to our supply of injectable medicines. And that's because of their blue blood. They don't have hemoglobin like us. They have copper in their blood instead of iron. Yeah. So their blood is blue. But on top of that, they have special immune cells in their blood called amoeba amebocytes. And scientists discovered, you know, many, many years ago that these amebocytes produce a protein that reacts immediately with bacterial toxins. So the type of toxins you get in a bacterial cell wall, if you inject any of that into horseshoe crab blood, it immediately coagulates. So this became a test in the pharmaceutical industry to make sure that inadvertently no toxins had got into a batch of drugs, because obviously if any of those toxins get into you or I, they could kill us, we could get sepsis.
Every batch will
every
be tested.
Every single batch. And most people don't know this. So, you know, in the springtime, these horseshoe crabs, which have been on Earth for millions of years, they come into the shores around the coast of North America. They lay millions and millions of eggs. But at the same time, suppliers to the pharma companies swoop in. They take hundreds of thousands of these crabs off the beach. They bring them to labs where they strap them down and put a needle in beside their heart. They take 30% of their blood out. And then any that survive are returned to the sea, but often at much reduced fitness.
So obviously, this is, yeah, you take 30% of anyone's blood away and
yeah, you're not going to be great feeling shape. Great.
They
yeah.
could be very vulnerable to predators.
Absolutely. So this raises all sorts of ethical and ecological issues, but also it's an issue for us because, you know, if we suddenly had another pandemic and we needed massive amounts of batches of vaccine and for some reason something happened to the horseshoe crab population, we are entirely dependent on them for every single drug.
Who came across this as a notion, and then how quickly it spread to?
I mean, it is one of those things where curiosity-driven research uncovers things that are incredible that we don't know what they're going to do. But actually, about 10 years ago in Singapore, a scientist, she was working on this and she identified the particular protein in the crab's blood that does this. And she, again, used genetic engineering to make an artificial version. And you know what? It works even better than the horseshoe crab version. So the horseshoe crab test is called the LAL test. Her test is the recombinant factor C protein because she just took the factor C. But I think the news this week is, even though this test has been around for a long time, her test, it hasn't been adopted by the pharma industry because the regulators look for the standard test, which is the LAL test using the horseshoe crab blood. But just this week, one of the main kind of advisory bodies and regulators in the US has decided to endorse her test.
What does RFK think of this?
I don't know about that. But her test is much more standard. It's exactly the same protein every time because it's produced in a lab. You know, when you're extracting something
and
from
does
nature.
Does it cause coagulation or does it do something different?
She's done something even more elegant. It fluoresces rather than just causing coagulation. So that's easier to detect with modern lab equipment. I mean, there's a bit of an upfront cost for companies because obviously if you're switching a process from something that's a well-trodden path you've done for every batch of medication, there'll be an upfront cost. But actually, the RFC test will be cheaper in the long run. And of course, it doesn't have the ethical and moral issues and potentially the really dangerous supply chain issues for us.
Should anything happen to the horseshoe crab?
Now,
what about European regulators? Have they followed suit?
Not yet. And only about 15% of companies have been using this test at all. So it has been allowed in limited circumstances for the last 10 years or so. But often companies have had to do the two tests or they've had to do additional testing on top of the RFC test. So there's some companies like Lonza and Eli Lilly, which have been pushing forward with this. But it seems now at least that regulatory hurdle has gone. The future might be a bit brighter for the poor old horseshoe crab and maybe for us.
The way you describe it, strapping them down and putting a needle close to their heart to take away their blood.
Yeah.
It's cruel.
These things are out of sight for many of us. And I guess we put them out of sight, out of mind. But pressure from campaigners has been a big part of this change. So it's great to see science doing something really good in this case.
Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Thank you very much.